Welcome and thank you for joining our podcast. As we celebrate Women's History Month, whose 2024 theme is Women Who Advocate for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, we are appropriately discussing IEND with one of our leading authorities in the field. I am Margaret Parnell Hogan, a shareholder and co-chair of Littler's Women's Leadership Initiative from the Denver, Colorado office. Today, we've invited Deoncia Johnson-Massey from our Atlanta office to discuss inclusion, equity, and diversity efforts, particularly as they relate to recruiting and retaining women in the current legal landscape. In addition to her status as an SME in IEND, Deoncia is an accomplished litigator. Additionally, she has served as co-chair of Littler's Diversity Council, is co-chair of Littler's award-winning career advocacy program, and was a founding co-chair of the Women's Leadership Initiative. Deoncia, I'm so happy to talk with you today. Our Women's History Month 2024 theme is so perfect for you, as in the nearly 25 years I have worked at Littler, I have seen amazing examples of Littler women advocating for diversity, and you are one of the brightest examples.
Thank you, Margaret. I appreciate your kind words and am happy to talk about IEND as it's near and dear to my heart. My IEND background actually began as an admissions officer at Yale, where I served as both the assistant to the Dean of Admissions and an officer in Yale's minority recruitment program. So complying with legal obligations and brainstorming about ways to create more inclusive opportunities and executing on those legally compliant strategies are a part of my DNA. That interest extended in law school, where I was selected to be a group facilitator of small groups of UVA law students discussing gender and race in the law and in society more generally, and continued as a leader in our beloved firm when I co-founded and eventually co-led both our Diversity and Inclusion Council nearly 20 years ago, and then our Women's Leadership Initiative for many years. And when I served in various firm leadership positions, including on our firm's board of directors, my goal was always, how can we improve upon the experiences of all people and create a more inclusive culture? These experiences taught me how to listen intently to people with varying lived experiences and perspectives, facilitate safe spaces for communicating about these differing views, and then to devise strategies respectful of those differences while achieving mutually beneficial objectives. I incorporate those experiences into the work that I do with clients. Our clients want to know whether we appreciate the myriad of experiences represented in their workplaces, and can we then help them to strategize about solutions that respect the unique characteristics of their workplace cultures and business objectives? We do not all have to share the same perspectives, but we all must work together diligently to achieve the business objectives.
That's amazing background, Deoncia, and even more impressive than I already thought. Thank you for sharing that with us. You know, last summer, in the summer of 2023, we saw the Supreme Court issue opinions in the SFFA or the Harvard and UNC cases. On their face, they were cases about the use of race in the context of college admissions with challenges brought under Title VI. They were not brought in the Title VII or employment context. As Justice Gorsuch observed in a concurring opinion, however, Title VI is just next door to Title VII, and we have seen feedback and a ripple effect on the IEND space for employers who are subject to Title VII. As we celebrate Women's History Month here at Littler, we are hoping you can share with us how you are advising employers about the impact of the Supreme Court decisions on IEND efforts, in particular with respect to women in the workplace.
Margaret, you are so right. The case itself changed nothing for employers in terms of legal compliance. This was a college admissions case where the same Supreme Court had previously permitted colleges to consider race as one criterion in a long line of criteria like academics, extracurriculars, athletic ability, school support, and other personal factors, including legacy status, when considering college applications. Under Title VII, most employers already understood they could not use gender as a factor when making employment decisions like hiring, promotions, and terminations. But we are taking the lessons gleaned from this decision to advise our clients on a few things. The first really is not to retreat from their commitments to IE&D if they remain committed to advancing inclusive opportunities in the workplace. But it is a perfect opportunity to ensure they are making decisions that are based on criteria necessary for the job opportunity at issue, rather than on any protected characteristic like gender, for example. What does the job require? And are those skills reflected in a current, updated job description? If not, then we're advising our clients to revise the job descriptions to reflect what is currently required. If there is an insufficient pool of candidates or a pool that is not reflective of who is available, then explore how one is recruiting and/or developing talent and determine if there are tweaks to be made to those processes. Also, it's okay to determine if there are internal training opportunities or programs that could provide skill enhancements to existing talent and offer those opportunities to all employees. The goal of inclusion is to assess whether all people are gaining equal access to opportunities for which they qualify, including through mentoring, training, and development, and then to lawfully modify processes that are falling short. The big key, though, is to remind decision makers to make the decisions that do not rely on gender-specific criterion. You do this by reminding those managers making employment decisions that those decisions must be made in a neutral manner.
So we've seen since that decision a bunch of legal challenges. They've come over the past several months with lawsuits being filed all across the country, asserting theories of so-called reverse discrimination. And many of these cases raise the same basic question. One district court judge from Southern Texas recently wrote in such an opinion, quote, "This lawsuit raises a question that many companies are struggling to answer. What steps can a company take to encourage the promotion of women or underrepresented minorities to managerial positions without discriminating against men or individuals outside the protected class seeking the same opportunity?" What are you seeing, Deanzia, in terms of questions from these lower court filings?
You know, Margaret, this to me is the million-dollar question. And it's important for employers to know that it remains lawful to engage in activities designed to expand the pipeline of potential applicants. This means, in real practical terms, that it is lawful to encourage women to apply for job opportunities without doing so to the exclusion of men. Men, too, should be encouraged to apply for opportunities. Managers can still reach out to talented women in their organizations and encourage them to apply for a promotion and then share information about the role with them. It also means that managers should proactively develop women so they can gain high visibility opportunities in their organizations. The key in all of these efforts is not to exclude people because of their protected characteristics. This means we can't exclude our colleagues because they are men or Caucasian. It remains lawful to have mentoring programs and affinity groups with some key caveats. Be certain that all people are invited to participate in them and that their business purpose is clearly articulated and understood. In many instances, employees have identified that their usual practices of identifying and/or cultivating talent are not reaching a broader group of talented people. So employers are seeking expanded methods for doing so. Helping all employees to understand the business purpose and context while ensuring that all people are included in the opportunities goes a really long way. It also helps to meet some other key business objectives by creating an inclusive workplace culture and expanding the group of employees now prepared for more opportunities within the organization. Big picture is it's a win-win.
And what sorts of answers are you seeing these cases provide, understanding that a lot of these cases are in their infancy? They haven't yet gone through the full litigation cycle.
You know, it's interesting. The cases to me appear to fall into like two buckets. One of the buckets is that there are cases where the basic answer is the same, meaning IE&D programs that directly or indirectly require or encourage that actual hiring, retention, pay, or promotion decisions be based in whole or in part on gender or race can lead to company liability. That's that one bucket. The other bucket is that some courts have explored the relationship between the IE&D program's existence and the specific employment decision at issue. Where there is no evidence that a connection exists, then these courts have determined that an employment decision is not based on gender, for example. In these cases, it's important for employers to consider how instructive certain lessons are. One of those instructive lessons is to work diligently to minimize decision-maker, quote-unquote, pressure testimony. This means that employers must ensure that decision-makers know they cannot make decisions based on protected characteristics. They must follow the process existing at the time the position was posted and do not change selection criteria midstream or halt the selection of candidates when they are clearly qualified and there remains a business justification for filling the role. The other critical component is to make sure that we are disconnecting the employment decision from the IE&D goals. We do this by focusing the attention on the job requirements of the role, ensuring candidates meet those job requirements, and then selecting the best candidate for this opportunity.
Those are very instructive points for all employers to consider. One other thing that I wanted to ask you about, Dianzia, is allies. Allies have been a critical part of our work here at Littler. They've been very important in ensuring that we find a diverse pool of employees. We couldn't have done the work that we've done without allies. What role do you see that allies can play in ensuring that these diversity initiatives remain an important part of U.S. workplaces?
Margaret, I could not agree with you more that allies play a critical role in advancing opportunities for all talent and in creating an inclusive workplace culture. In my perfect world, I would love it if every person considered that their jobs require them to engage with all employees and to advance the careers of all employees. Then this would really open the door to expanded opportunities. So, for example, I don't have to be an Israeli or Palestinian woman to read about their experiences, to talk with them, and to identify ways that I can create a more inclusive and respectful workplace culture. This is the power of allyship. Read, learn about others, and then devise a strategy for creating opportunities that ensure that they too receive equitable opportunities and experience respectful workplace treatment. Sponsorship and mentoring programs are also great ways to involve allies. Thinking of what I said earlier, we do not all have to share the same perspective, but we all must work together diligently to achieve the business objectives if we are to be collectively successful.
Deoncia, as always, I have learned so much in this conversation with you. I really thank you for your time today, and I want to thank you for all you do to advocate for equity, diversity, and inclusion at Littler.
Thank you, Margaret. It's been a pleasure for me. And one of my most exciting things to see at this stage in my career is other women leaders who are doing phenomenal things in our firm. And I count you as a co-leader of our Women's Leadership Initiative now as one of the brightest stars, too. Thank you for all that you do.